listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit livingthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 231 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my pal Sean Orford. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm good. We're in Birkenhead again, aren't we?
Birkenhead, yep.
In Pacific Road. Pretty cool place, isn't it?
It's good.
I overheard someone in this very office say we have the weirdest office in the world. I don't think it's that weird. We've got a blood pressure monitor on the desk there. Yep. We're getting virtual reality set up around the place as well.
Yeah, green screens.
Green screens in the works, all sorts. A little studio on the go, isn't it?
Yeah, very good.
Exciting. It's all part of our plan.
Take over the world.
Take over the world. Dream job. No, day job to dream job.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about this week. We've had a listener request. We'll be coming on to that shortly. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. Taking a look at it for all the show notes and links. Bye, Mike.
Bye.
And don't forget to stick your email address in the box on the website. We'll send you some free goodies and also a 10% discount code for our book, Living the Present, which we've got plenty of in stock at the moment, I think.
We have.
Is that right? I saw we sent one out to a customer in Germany earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Overseas.
Yeah. Exciting. Well, international, though.
International, of course. What have you been up to? How's tricks?
Very good, very good. I want to shout out for Wreckfish, which is a restaurant, sort of bistro restaurant, just opened in Liverpool. And it's a guy who does some amazing food. And there's a whole load around, aren't there? There's the sticky walnut is in Chester. The burnt truffle is in Heswell.
Yeah.
And there is one in Manchester as well, but it's just opened one in Liverpool. And the food is absolutely extraordinary. It's really good, you know, Michelin kind of food.
Veggie as well, I assume.
Kinds of stuff. They do veggie, fish, meat.
Veggies kind of stuff. Are well catered for.
Yeah, yeah. We went and had a meal there. And you can go and have three-course meal of absolutely fabulous food. Glass of wine is like 20 quid a head.
Blimey.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Amazing food.
Wreckfish, we'll stick a link to their website in the show notes. I'll have to try and find some time. We're just kind of limited with obviously babysitting options, so when we do get to go out, it's kind of once every 3, 4, 5 months.
We were going to do a pizza before the winter, and the pizza oven gets packed away.
Oh, right. Have you got to pack it away, have you?
Yeah.
Or cover it up, or what?
It gets wet, and then you don't want it to freeze.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I need to dry it out, a couple of fires in there to dry it out, and then put the cover over the top.
Just cover it up?
Yeah.
You've got a special custom-built pizza oven cover.
Yep, yep. It's like a coat.
All the gear. No idea. Very good. Cool. Yeah, doing well as well. We had bonfire weekend, didn't we? Which was,
It
was bonfire night on Sunday, which worked out quite nicely because we had events on Friday and Saturday as well. Mm. Proper good. I'm going to give a shout out to Lazy Weekends because we didn't have anything planned. I think we did bump into you guys in Aldi one day. Besson did. Spent most of Saturday just playing Mario Kart. So I want to give a shout out to Nintendo for making the best games going. Good fun.
Yeah.
Getting that time of year, aren't we, where it's kind of just stay inside, get cozy, stick a film on. No worries.
It's good. I love it.
Right, let's crack on with the show. We have had an email from a listener asking us to talk about day job to dream job stuff, which basically they're in the teaching game and they wanted to get out of that and into another industry or another area to work on their, live out their dreams, really, and work on something a bit more fulfilling.
Yep.
So Ryan, our listener, has asked us to talk about that a bit more.
Yeah.
And we're both shining examples of what not to do.
I don't know. For me, I didn't. I haven't worked for other people for years. I mean, I do stuff for the NHS now. But I've been self-employed back into the sort of annals of time. I mean, I did work when I first left home, PAYE stuff. But I've always had some level of self-employment, I guess.
Mm-hmm. When you came back from your travels overseas, were you straight into self-employment? Or?
When I came back from my travels, the only way I could earn money was to play music. So I played gigs every night around, like one-man show stuff, whilst I was doing some Western training. But then I started running staff support stuff, which became my big thing, which ended up with I had a company, which still exists, called the Network of Staff Supporters.
Yep.
And at one point it was the biggest provider of counsellors in organisations in Britain.
Very good.
It was big.
But did it become too big?
Did
you create a monster? That's what we'll kind of come on to.
Well, what I did was I ended up effectively giving it for a minimal price to the people that were helping me run it. You know, I got to the point where I was driving 46,000 miles a year, going up and down the country, Isle of Wight to Glasgow, and it became too much for me. So I decided that the company had taken over me rather than me taking over the company.
Yeah.
And they all wanted to do it, so it was good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, well, yeah, 30 years later, here you are sitting in an office in Birkenhead.
Yeah, luxury.
Recording a podcast for no remuneration, but hey-ho.
Well, one of the things that's asked in this request is about, it's like day job to dream job. And what happened for me was, what I looked at was, rather than what would earn me money, I just looked at what would make me feel good, what would make me feel happy, what would be my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided the two things that made me feel good were working with other people and playing music, and that's what I've done ever since.
Yeah. Can't say fairer than that. Yeah, I mean, we'll come on to all sorts of things in this episode about kind of goal setting and planning, which is important, but my own story is things have kind of grown quite organically in the last, well, I've been nine years out of full-time employment. So yeah, I had a reasonably decent junior design job. It was going okay, all on track, but yeah, what was it that triggered it for me? I was given the chance to go to Africa and do some charity work as part of the church that Bethan and I go to, and I couldn't get enough time off from my boxy little job to go and have this amazing experience.
You mean they wouldn't let you?
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. So I saw... Yeah, and Bethan went off and with the family, actually, and had an amazing time out in Kenya. And I was stuck in an office in Birkenhead, probably about like a quarter of a mile from here, actually, weirdly enough. And it was that moment, really, that made me start to think about it. And it wasn't until a few months later on a Christmas night out that I got chatting with another one of my now business partner. And we hatched this plan over a few tequilas to get out of there, because he's a similar age.
Mm.
We both didn't have kids. We weren't married yet, but you know, we had partners that could support us for the lean times early on. God bless them. And a couple of months after that, we were handing our notice in, and off we went with a set of business cards each and a little website. And it's grown quite organically from then. There was no business plan, really. There was a couple of clients we kind of brought with us, or that we knew would want to stick with us, and people that we could go to ask. No kind of set in stone business plan, or no kind of huge mood board in my spare room, which things I wanted to tick off. and it's grown. Yeah, I think that kind of organic growth of how I work was quite important, really, because along the way, initially I wanted to do more graphic design, more visual stuff, pen and paper, even maybe illustration, but people kept asking me for websites, so I had to learn this new skill, which I quite enjoyed. I do enjoy learning new things. I'm quite techie and all that. And that has then since grown into kind of the biggest area of my business. So maybe early on, how about we talk about, if you do have a plan and you need some rough sort of plan, I guess, but do you need to be flexible to some degree?
Yeah, and I see people fail because they are set on a target and the target isn't there. You know, they're not going to hit it, it's not going to happen, but they're sort of determined, and they just, like a lemming running for the cliff, and you watch it happening, you think, whoa, no, slow down.
Yeah.
But they do it so easily, and getting to that point where you can allow things to, I don't know, maybe change what you're going to do. I mean, one of the things about self-employment, doing stuff for yourself, it's like in America, unless you've been bankrupt at least once, then you haven't kind of got your feet wet. is the kind of attitude, you know. But failing and then having to get back up again is quite a difficult task. But, I mean, most people go through periods of failure or flat periods when you're trying to do the self-employed thing.
Yeah. You know. Well, how long did it take you to kind of really kind of get up and running and until you realise you were in the right...
I always reckon a couple of years to get... Yeah, I reckon that was probably that for me. And because I did lots of gigs, which was the nighttime job, I could do the daytime job.
Yeah.
So that was what funded me doing all the other stuff to get it going.
Right. Okay.
So it's okay if you've got a partner that can do that for you, but if not, you've got to go and gig yourself. So.
Indeed. Yeah, well, I mean, coming on to the next point then, I want to talk about... I don't want to be too downbeat, but I just want to kind of make our listeners aware of a couple of things. One of the things I found tricky, which I hadn't prepared for at all, which is quite obvious in hindsight about going it alone, is that you're going it alone. So I was going from an office where I was with 10, 15, 20 people every day, having fun, having a laugh, catching up on what we'd all done at the weekend or what was going on in our lives, having Christmas parties, you know, where you get to have a real social life too, working by myself at home all day, every day. And, you know, obviously I'd see my now wife when she got in. I'd chat to my parents and friends at the weekends about how I was doing, and they'd be obviously fully supportive, but it's quite a lonely existence, or it can be, can't it?
Yeah.
It took me a long time to figure that out, actually.
But that's why. I mean, you're in a shared office, aren't you? So how many of you share this office?
Well, there's four of us today.
So there's four of you all doing different things, doing your own businesses.
Yeah.
But there's that shared support together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're recreating the extended family in the office.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Basically.
And that makes loads of sense. And around here, especially if you go out to Liverpool, there's places like the Baltic Triangle where there are lots of creatives all coming together, where they're working their own things in big studios, but they're sharing resources. Which is
cool. So I would definitely look into that side of things in terms of looking at where you're going to work, who you're going to be interacting with. Even if it's just someone else, you might not be specifically like a business partner with someone, but someone that you can share the journey with and just kind of bat ideas back and forth with, either on a daily basis, really, someone you need to speak to every day.
What do you think about the idea of networking, going to networking meetings and stuff?
Oh, yeah, well, that was a huge deal for me personally. My line of work, yeah, it was all about meeting other businesses that needed help with stuff. But again, I didn't realise these networking groups existed until like 6 months into being in business. And my initial plan for getting work in was I had this spreadsheet of companies that I'd kind of researched and looked up online that I thought, you know, they were all kind of local-ish, that I was going to call or try and set an appointment with, have a chat with. And I'm not very good selling in that sense. So, I mean, I think I might have called maybe two, had the guts to. Maybe I emailed a few more. That's not really going to work. But, yeah, then I got invited to a networking meeting early on. And funnily enough, an original networking meeting I went to, where there was probably 15 people around a table at 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, before work gets going, I'm probably really close friends and with at least four of those people from that original meeting that I went to. And it was kind of I wouldn't say the work started flowing immediately, but it was really eye-opening that there's a lot of other people out there doing the same thing.
And I think what that highlights for me when you start a business is the difference between advertising and marketing. Like, advertising can actually be a waste of money, whereas marketing, actually going out and meeting people and doing stuff, is where it happens.
Yeah.
That's the good bit.
Yeah, definitely. So that was, from the email we've had, I don't think that might be necessarily the way forward, networking for Ryan, but certainly trying to build that community that you can get involved with outside of the workplace you're currently in, I think is right up there on the list of things.
If we look at what he's doing, he's talking about going from being a music performer teacher to being a composer. Now the thing is that I guess with composing, it's like when I write a book, you know, you do the work once, as it were, and then hopefully there is a return over time on that, and it depends on who is composing for. But it may well be that he has to create multiple streams of income so that he's got several things going at once to enable him to do his composing.
Yep.
And I don't know whether he can do the teaching like part time and like phase from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always the big one, is it? It's because lots of people can go part time and gradually reduce them, but there comes the point where you've got to jump.
Mm. Well, that's something I did actually, I'd forgotten about. After uni, this is before I got my first job actually, so after uni I was working at Clatterbridge Hospital.
Yep.
As a medical records clerk. And in fact, that's where we crossed paths for the first time.
Yep.
But yeah, I was kind of sitting in for a lady who was, I was temping. I think she was ill or she was, I don't think it was maternity leave. Anyway, I was doing this job full time for her, but I wanted to build a portfolio and start doing freelance work design in my spare time. And I kind of realised in this job early on that it was a job that I could actually do in 2 or 3 days, as opposed to sitting there for 5 days and it's working on and off through the day, but wasting a bit of time, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I approached the boss of whoever, the department, and asked her if I would be able to do it in 3 days, and have 2 days off so I could work at home.
Mm-hmm.
She said, yeah, amazingly, and I managed to do it. I had to work so hard to get it done in those 3 days, running around like a lunatic, but got it done. And I had two days to build my portfolio, and then that portfolio then allowed me to get the job, full-time job as a designer, which then I quit after 18 months and then went it alone. So yeah, I think in Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week, that's one of his initial kind of strategies that he talks about, is to try and speak to your boss wherever you are, if it's possible at all, and try and just drop it down to a day, to 4 days a week if possible, or three if you can, see how they take it, and then just build things a little bit gradually rather than going completely cold turkey.
Yeah, and I guess that because when I came back and started working here, I've always been doing the multi-stream of income that lots of different people. I mean, at the moment, I do the American stuff, I do the Qatar stuff, I do the NHS stuff, I do a whole load of private stuff. I've probably got 6-7 streams of income that are going on.
Okay.
Yeah, now if any of those go down, and I think that's always a powerful point when you're trying to build something. If you're multi-streaming and one stream dries up, then you've still got other streams going to keep you going.
Yep.
Yeah. If you only got one stream and that dries up, then you're stuffed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is it? I remember having a meeting once with a financial advisor that I had met through networking, so I got to know him, and he kind of ran me through his spiel of what he advises clients and what have you. And one thing he was saying that he kind of recommends to all his clients that are kind of starting to invest money here, there, and everywhere, all legally, of course, given the recent news.
Yeah.
That it's good advice for anyone, whatever line of work you're in, to have minimum of 6 months' salary stashed away somewhere.
Yeah.
So that if things do go belly up, you're not stressing too much, and you're not using credit cards. And
It's what I, when I was a kid, was known as your wadge. You had to have a wadge in your back pocket and just keep going.
Okay.
And I habitually carry a wadge, always.
That's your wadge.
That's my wadge.
But I won't tell you how much he just pulled out of his pocket. It wasn't 50s, though. It was just £20 notes.
It was thousands,
isn't it? I've never seen so much dosh.
Yeah.
But if you are going to prepare, rather than jumping off straight away, get yourself 6 months to get ready and save, get a bit of savings in a bank so that you're not immediately like struggling and gasping for air when that salary dries up.
There are so many things that you learn when you do this. I mean, it's like you're selling your time. And when you're selling your time, how much is your time worth? How much are you prepared to pay for it? And if you sell your time too cheaply, then people don't value it. There's a million lessons that you have to get into when you're doing this. You know? So delicate to get it right. You know, how much do you ask for what you're doing?
Mm.
And that sometimes you can tell from the industry. You can see that other people are charging a kind of a standard rate, so you get a guidance.
Right.
Then lots of things, you just have to go for it.
Yep.
You know? So I guess you can fill your order book and then you can up your price. And then fill your order book again and then you can up your price. You know?
I'm currently at the stage where I've got just enough work on for myself. I dish out a little bit to freelancers and guys that I can trust. But I kind of joke that I'm the least ambitious entrepreneur in the world quite a lot of the time, and I've got to the point where I'm at decision time really for my web design business, where it's like, do I grow it or do I keep it where it is and look at other avenues for income? And I've seen a lot of, to be fair, this is another thing where you want to be careful what you set out and what you create, because I've seen a lot of other web design companies or spoken with a lot of bosses who have started out like me and then have grown and have been advised to take on another member of staff and take a loan out here, and then all of a sudden they've got this monster that needs 30, 40, 50,000 pounds a month of business to feed it.
Yeah.
And the sleepless nights that come from that, I don't know, it's not something that I personally am looking for.
Yeah. And I guess that's what it's down to. You think you know the story about the guy fishing? Have you ever told you that story?
Oh, yeah, the Mexican...
There's a guy fishing on the river.
I've heard it in Mexico. It's set in Mexico, but go on.
Anywhere, yeah. And a guy comes up to him and says, you're so good at fishing. If you got three rods, you'd be able to catch more fish and sell some, and then you could do that. And he takes him through this whole scenario where he ends up with ships and a shipping line, and then he's got a canning factory, and he's taken over the world in the fish market. And then he says to the guy, so if you had so much wealth that you could do whatever you wanted to do, what would you do? You could do absolutely anything. He said, I'd come down here and I'd go fishing. Yeah. And it's like, why not just stay there fishing rather than doing all the other stuff?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, even the richest people on the planet can only use one bed, you know, one living room, one toilet, one... You know,
one super yacht. Yeah,
yeah. They may have 20, but they actually only use one at a time.
Yeah,
yeah. And getting your head around what you actually need. It's like when you say to people, "How much do you want?" They say a million, because a million's a nice round figure. Yeah, but actually 100,000 would probably sort most people out.
Yeah,
pretty well. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. It's being very realistic. And I think that when you're self-employed, that's what it teaches you. You start to get down to the real things. You know.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, I was never that ambitious when I set up the web design company. I knew that I wanted a life, based on the example of when I wasn't allowed to go on that trip away overseas, chance of a lifetime. I wanted a life where I wasn't necessarily wanting to be a millionaire. I just wanted to be in charge of decisions, and if I want to take some time off, I can, like I did on Friday. Missus was off, so I just stuck my autoresponder on. Worked a bit extra the night before, in fairness, and worked a bit the Friday night just to keep up, but took Friday off, went round Liverpool, had a lovely little day out.
Yeah.
And I get so much time to spend with my kids. I know they're a pain in the backside, and they just suck so much energy. But I know that I will look back on these, like, this last few years and the next few years ahead as, like, the best years with my kids, because they're just so special at the moment.
They're
so annoying, but they're just amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm really lucky to spend so much time with them, and I do the school drop off, pick them up, I'm there, I'm at home, I'll be home in an hour now, getting tea ready, all that lark, putting them to bed every single night. It's important, that stuff, isn't it? Well, it is to me anyway.
I know, very, very, very important. Yeah. And I guess that comes down to, why am I doing what I'm doing? My experience of people that are in business doing whatever they're doing is that if they enjoy what they're doing, so that the money is the byproduct of what they do, then they're happy.
Yeah.
If they're focused on making the money, then they end up being unhappy. I've had loads of clients that have been disgustingly rich and amazingly miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So the two things don't fit together at all. It's to do with how you feel about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's that phrase, that we should love people and use money, not the other way around?
Yeah, definitely.
And as long as you do that, then I think you've got a chance of having a successful business, a successful life.
There's another, I just read it this morning, a cautionary tale. I'll stick it in the show notes. TorontoLife.com. It's about a restaurateur who quit his job and wanted to open a restaurant, which is actually something that is quite appealing to me, really. I like the idea, but having read this article, maybe not. Chap with, I think he had a couple of kids, loved his food, it was a good cook, wanted to open his own restaurant in Toronto, quit his job, took out a loan, etc., and everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong, and I think eventually it kind of, things turned out okay, but he says at the end, having known the path that he would have gone on at the start to get to where success things were kind of running well, he said he wouldn't have done it. So I don't want to put anyone off their dreams, but I think it's important to read things like that early on, so you know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah. And being prepared to change, adapt, develop, and if something isn't working, stop it.
Yeah. But the struggle is real, isn't it? And often the struggle is, we can look back on the struggle in the time when you're mired in it, it can be horrendous, but when you look back, it can be seen to be quite a beautiful thing, can't it?
Yeah. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah. You see all the celebrity chefs on telly, James Martin and Simon Rimmer and all that lot, and they've got restaurants all over the country, but I don't know much about those guys in particular, about the struggles that they went through to get to where they are now, because often you don't hear about that.
No.
I remember reading about a George Clooney article. He was kind of taking a swipe back at people who kind of accuse him of being this kind of liberal elite, Hollywood elite, where he's got all this money and he flies around in his jets and all that, and he was saying, yeah, I am an elite now, I am up there, but I went door to door selling suits for 8 years, man, in suits that didn't fit me.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff that people don't know about it.
Yeah.
But had he not done all that stuff, he wouldn't be where he is now. I mean, he's a good looking guy, so I don't know, maybe he would have got success ultimately anyway, but.
Yeah, and I think any of us that go through those life processes where you do turn lead into gold, you know, you go through that process of turning what wasn't such a good thing into a good life.
Yeah.
It's easy to see someone, I mean, people say to me, oh, it's okay for you, you're so chilled and you're so relaxed. But they didn't see the drug-crazed loony who was running around in the gutter, you know, years ago, you know what I mean? That's funny.
Yeah, I didn't end up in a gutter, but yeah. Didn't.
Just the drug craze.
Just the drug craze, man. Did you have a mentor at all, or anyone that you, or anyone now that you speak to kind of keep you on track? Or
yeah. We all have, as psychotherapists, we all have other people that we talk to. We have to, as part of our registration, and I think that's really important, because it doesn't keep you on track as business, but it keeps you on track as a person.
Yeah,
which is the thing. So I've said about Yola, who I've known Yola for years, and we get together every month and look after each other.
Okay.
Yeah, which is important.
For sure.
Yeah, and Ree has someone she goes to, so it's like, yeah, all looking after each other.
Yeah, and likewise with anyone out there, I didn't really specifically have a mentor that, that I called, you know, once a month, but there were people that I'd met or that I'd known that had done similar things, or that I kind of spoke to on a regularish basis just to kind of check in with, so they could see how I was doing and I could ask advice for. So getting a mentor of some kind, I think, is quite an important thing.
But then sometimes when you go to the kind of job club things, then and the networks, and very often you're meeting people like that.
You can
get advice from.
Yeah, well, that's right. I met a lot of people that were in the same line of work as me, so technically competitors, but they were more than happy to dish out advice. And likewise, now I go to events now with, where I see people fresh out of uni or have just gone it alone, and you know, I can dish out advice to them. Always really happy to.
It's good.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I'm good, really. I guess that the thing is, and this is what was said to me right at the beginning when I started working on my own, as it were, never worship at the altar of the one big client.
Yeah.
Never put all your eggs in as... who was the lady that said, men don't make passes, ladies in glasses?
Oh, I'm not sure.
It was her. But she said, one of her phrases was, don't put your eggs in one bastard, which I thought was very appropriate. But there you go.
Okay.
But it's dead easy to screw yourself up by tying yourself to one form of income.
Mm.
And then you become as trapped as you were in the paid job.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah.
Cool. You got a resource?
Yeah, it's a little blog, which is on balance.com, which is a really good site to go on. Lots of interesting blogs and articles there. But it's about multiple streams of income.
Cool.
How to do it. So I think it's a good one. Yeah.
I'll stick it in the show notes. And mine is fizzle.co. It's a brilliant platform, online community, where you can learn how to make a digital online business.
Right.
It's by Chase Reeves and Oh, I've forgotten the name of the other guy. Corbett Barr.
They've been going quite a while, haven't they?
They have, yeah. They're doing well. They've got a podcast of their own, which you can get at no cost, and they do a blog as well.
Yeah.
Or you can, I think for a month, you can join in and see everything for like $2, or you can then it's like $30 a month.
Yeah.
But it's a real online community, and I was involved with it for a while, and you can ask questions, and the founders will get back to you, and there's other people that will. It's a whole area where you can get loads of advice. So take a look.
Yep, good one.
Cool, all right, we're all done.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Livingthepresent.co.uk for our details. All the links that we've mentioned will be there as well for this and previous shows. And, we'll see you all the same time next week, won't we?
I should get on and go and do my dream job.
Go do your dream job?
I'm now going to teach a mindfulness course in a hospital in Liverpool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So,
best of luck.
Good.
All right, cool.
Yep.
See you later, Sean.
You take care.
Cheers. Bye.